Good evening, everyone. It's like Jewish temple. The men on one side and the women on the other. Very nice to see you, Ying. She's wearing her brand new rock suit. Just received a week ago. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Why don't we do introductions around? I don't think you know everybody.
Wendy, Judy, Ellen, Ian.
Steve.
Paul.
Ron.
Ken.
Yeah.
So we're in the middle of the precepts, believe it or not. Because what Ying just did was all about the precepts. Seeing them in front of everybody. Very beautiful ceremony. Plain and simple. So we've got to number 5. It's a grave precept. The way I learned it, was no clouding the mind. The basic given one is not to poison the mind, I think, with various I think specifically alcohol. So it was a problem all the way back, but it means a whole lot more than that. It's much more about anything that we can become addicted to, that we use to cloud our mind so that we don't have to deal with things, that we can just check out in some way. And of course, it's not just alcohol or just drugs either. It could be the movies. It could be games on using games. I know several people who were totally addicted to games and never left the house. They just played all day long. I had a babysitter, little old lady who sat for my 3 little boys in Reno. And we would go skiing and come back and take her home. She didn't want to go home. She wanted to go to the gambling place. Took all her money and put it in the slot machine every time. So they're all things that are pleasurable, and there are many more different kinds, many, many more that we can think of, and I hope we can think of them tonight. As we talk about this, I think it's very helpful to be very aware of where our mind goes, where it finds solace and refuge, and where it finds a kind of checking out or hiding out. It's about our sense of ourself. Mostly about our sense of ourself and cultivating ignorance around it. So it's creating delusion. it's cultivating delusion one way or the other. And of course, it's usually something that has a hook. So it can be one little simple thing that's so nice that we do, But if it gets to be something that we have to do it, and we aren't any good unless we do it, and we get very upset if we can't do it, and it becomes a bigger and bigger problem in our life, we can begin to pay more attention to what is driving us. I was very addicted to smoking. I loved it. I still love it. I think it's a wonderful thing. And it's very ancient, very sacred practice, really. Tobacco, any kind of this, it's an offering, it's a service. I just love to hold it in my hand, the smell, and then to share a light with somebody. You actually have fire and you share the fire, and then the smoke goes up. It's very, very beautiful practice. 3 packs a day. It wasn't a very beautiful practice at all. It was terrible. And I knew it was terrible, and I was so hooked I couldn't stop until I got the Asian flu. And I was so sick I couldn't, and then the physical addiction went away. And so I could try to stop. And I tried, gritting my teeth, tried. But it wasn't until I realized one night before I went to bed, after I'd already gotten ready for bed, that I was out of cigarettes and I wouldn't have any for coffee in the morning. And this was a dreadful situation. I jumped in the car in the pouring rain and went to town and found cigarettes. So, and I, coming back, I thought, Annabelle, this is a problem. This is really stupid. Why are we doing this? And I stopped. So I just watch myself and watch everyone I know going through these kinds of stories, that our mind is just liking stuff and wanting stuff, and stuff is so good for us, and tastes and smells and feels so good. It's being a body is a very sensuous and marvelous experience, but it's shot through with ignorance when we're not paying attention to what's going on. So that's what this crave precept is. And of course the suggestion is that we proceed clearly. We try to have a clear view of where we are and what we're doing. That's the most important thing. What is this right now? What am I doing? Do I really mean to do this, or is this making me do it? So sometimes it's called refrain from using intoxicants. Dogen called it not allowing the mind to become dark, is the precept of refraining from using intoxicants. Not allowing the mind to become dark. Don't get lost. So, he said, we live at a time, and this is not Dogen, this is Dido. We live at a time and in a culture where there are multi-million-dollar industries dedicated to the research and creation of products and pastimes solely for the purpose of anesthetizing us from our lives. We know that. We know that. And then he goes on, Dido goes on quite a bit about drugs. And this was written quite a while ago, so the whole drug picture is keep shifting and changing, but drugs has become the biggest problem in America. And nobody quite knows what to do about it, because that is truly the most addictive thing that you can get involved with, and the most damaging. He says, traditionally this precept said, do not introduce intoxicants. Sometimes they say, do not sell intoxicants. But that too, don't offer it to other people and drag them into the thing. In other words, do not enable others to introduce intoxicants. Do not make others defile themselves. This is the great awareness. So he says, do not come bearing liquor. If liquor is not introduced, it cannot be consumed. So, easy peasy. So I wonder for you, your experience with this and how you cope with it. Do you have to get the Asian flu before you can stop doing it? Or do you have ways of noticing and in your long life, as life goes on, of course everything changes, so can look back and see what happened and how we dealt with it. Yep.
Yeah. Well, this weekend I was actually in Las Vegas, which was a great purpose for this chapter.
Yes.
I put $5 on number 22, and it got to be number
22. Wow.
In roulette. Yeah, exactly. So, but then afterwards I left right away. I'm not a big gambler.
Very smart.
Right. What is a more obvious example for my generation, I guess, is Facebook and like your phone.
Yes.
It's just so easy to like completely get dragged into that. So yeah, I think it and it's so, I feel like it's always so easy to feel when you're doing it. Like using Facebook, for example, can be completely delightful because I'm in touch with friends from all over the world, and I might post something and people like that, and you see people that you haven't seen in years that are then responding to something that you put out there, you know, and it can just be so joyful, and yet it can just be such a drag where you, while you're scrolling your newsfeed or you see all the updates, you just know you're being completely useless and you're not even enjoying it, but you're just kind of stuck to it, you know? Yeah, so that's I think, kind of the new smoking, maybe, in a way. But it feels kind of sophisticated to people. Maybe that's why it's a sort of a hidden addiction, you know?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And the other thing in this chapter I was actually wondering about is, I thought his the language in this chapter was particularly strong to the being good side, you know?
Yes.
Compared to other chapters. Whereas, you know, I was wondering why that was.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's Dido's take on it.
Mm-hmm.
I had Coben's out and I forgot to bring it because he doesn't talk about it quite that way.
Okay, right.
So he does make it very clear that it is an exercise in ignorance, the most basic kind.
Right.
And when we chant delusions are inexhaustible,
right.
It's those delusions it's talking about.
Yeah.
So it is a pretty big deal in a way. But it's not a goody-goody kind of thing. It isn't that you should never have a glass of wine.
Right.
It's that you need to know what you're doing when you have a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because for me, the range and, like, corporate culture is often a very good reference frame for me to study ethics as well, where it's much more common for people to, like, pressure each other into, like, doing shots and all that. And that, to me, is, like, past that line. But then also, you know, my grandfather, for example, was always so, like, adamant about how important it is to give your guests a good glass of wine.
Yes.
I think that I agree with that, you know, to some extent.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
There's a big range again.
Well, like all of them, it's a matter of real care in our own life.
Right.
How we see and use what comes to us.
Right.
All these marvels are available, and then we have to choose.
Right.
And those decisions are very tricky sometimes.
Right. And I have one other question. A couple weeks back, you mentioned about, you know, that big, famous Buddhist teacher who is, I think, Vietnamese.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that he went to, like, France, or I think, and he saw that the alcohol problem was the most severe, and that he got rid of a lot of wine vineyards.
Yes.
That to me also sounded really out there and kind of an extreme thing.
He came from a little village in Vietnam.
Right.
And when he describes that little village, it's turned into a kind of fairyland in his mind. The way he describes it, everybody loved everybody, and it was very small and beautiful, and the beautiful lagoons and water that they water lilies, and they would go out in the early morning and.
Right.
The lilies would open up and they would put tea in it, and then they would close up at night and infuse the tea. So then they would go back, and when they opened up, they could have this fragrant tea with the lilies and all these lovely things that they did. And then it became very, very terrible. And it was so terrible that he had to leave. And then nobody would take him. Nobody would accept him in the West because he really didn't want to take a side in the Vietnam War. He didn't think it was right to take a side. He was trying to create some kind of harmony between the two sides, and it was a hopeless task. So he ended up in France and began to interview Western students and got to know their problems and saw how much of it had to do with alcohol. And so, and with everything else, so that when I went to Plum Village, he'd already torn out the vineyards long since and had plum trees everywhere, which in other cultures could be turned easily into alcohol as well. Slivovitz is pretty good stuff, you know.
Right.
But he had rewritten the precepts about 5 times already, and they got longer and longer each one. He kept adding to them, and finally he's written a whole book because he's so concerned about how unconscious we are in the West, and he just is very worried about it. But it comes down on us as very sort of, you know, you got to be good.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Right.
You know? And we're kind of lackadaisical about it. Oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
It can be, having spent most of my life with an alcoholic, I know how important that is. And my own teacher had big problems with alcohol. Most of the Japanese teachers did. And it did not make them good teachers. No, it did not make a good husband. So it's fun, but it's really bad stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an exploration, a constant exploration.
Right. So, sorry, just one more comment. That pulling out all the vineyards, you know, knowing how much value there is in these cultural things and expertises,
yes,
in Europe. And on the one hand, I find it kind of inspiring that he was just like, you know, going on with this very radical thing. And on the other hand, it's also very offensive.
The French were horrified.
Exactly.
They could not believe
exactly.
He would do that.
Right.
I think that line of inquiry kind of you know makes me think, when people are trying to follow the precepts, one can become very stringent.
Yes.
About it. I've heard people talk about the precepts in a way where they don't even want to take an aspirin if they have a headache, because they think that they're clouding the mind and they should be present to the pain and their headache. But I think that's kind of a risk with anything of becoming sort of puritanical or overly stringent with the take on something. And I don't really have an answer for that, where the line is. If someone needs medical marijuana for some type of pain, they're going to get high a little bit, probably, if they use it, but maybe it's necessary in some way too. I don't know.
They make it now without the high.
Oh.
So you can take it. I have a friend who's taking it for sleep, and it just puts her to sleep. It tastes like blueberries. But yes, anything can be an excuse, including being addicted to the precepts. That's what you're talking about, is to holding on to something and making it into something when it's not. And we break the precepts, every single one. It's noticing when we're doing it, you know, when we are and when we're not. Noticing that we don't spend the money that we want at the wrong roulette table. Yeah. Yeah, very good point. Right?
Well, yeah, I kind of agree. It's a lot of it's just about paying attention. I enjoy drinking wine, and I got into it, you know, for a couple of years. I still have a lot. Then I realized I've been having my blood sugar go up, so now I'm concerned about that, so I just kind of... I don't really think I'm an alcoholic. I just like it, you know. But, no. So I just sort of quit doing it, and then I forget to do it. You know, I might still drink some on the weekend, but during the week I'm a little worried about getting my blood sugar back down so I don't have to go on medication. But, you know, in the case of an alcoholic, it's a different story. Like, I lived with one guy who, I'm not my roommate, but I loved him. had been an alcoholic, and he would, you know, he would take a sip of anything, because for somebody like that, it's a disease, and, you know, they can't, you know, they kind of lapse. They can just go on a binge, you know.
Yes.
But anyway, so what I noticed is that this pertains to other things, anything really.
Yeah.
If you kind of pay attention, you know, gosh, I'm spending all this time doing this activity or consuming this substance or smoking this or that. And why am I doing that?
Yes.
And then try not doing it, you know, it becomes, you can get rid of a habit. By definition, that's something you're used to doing, but don't do it anymore. And then your habit will be not to do that particular thing.
Mm. Sometimes we find something else to take its place.
Yeah, well, I mean, so many people, like I won't mention their names, they may be teetotalers and very anti-drug, but addicted to power.
Yes.
You know, or some people are addicted to money, you know, just greed, you know.
Well, the 12th...
I didn't know that.
The 12-step program has brought a lot of people to meditation. I know a lot of people who came to Zen just from having discovered the problem in themselves and taken the steps. And one of them is to really examine your life. I mean, it's all about examining your life and trying to see what it is that it wants to be, what it wants to be and do. And meditation is suggested as a way of doing that. And people come. And some of them are just amazed. So, Paul?
This is kind of strange, but in 1974, I went to work for a small company named Atari, and they made something new, something that hadn't been in the market before, called video games.
Yes.
And they were big games, they were arcade games, and you had to go to an arcade to play them. I worked there for 10 years and never grew up. It was marvelous, it was a wonderful time. We made some fantastic stuff, but now mostly arcades are gone. They're at home. It's an entirely different routine.
Yes.
People can spend 24 hours playing games. They can die playing games. I heard about that.
They do. They do.
I've got a PS3, but I hardly ever play a game on it. I've got three or four, and once in a while I'll turn it on to role-playing thing. You walk through, you have adventures. But mostly I just use it as a Blu-ray DVD player. But, wow, with video games and iPads, of course, and iPhones and all, the technology has really taken off. Like you said, billions of dollars are now spent in quote-unquote entertainment,
yes,
a way to get away from your life. I got hooked on something much more powerful. It's called Zen.
Yes, right.
It's positive. It's free. I can do it anytime I want. I don't have to quit. It's taken over everything. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll just keep up.
Bravo.
The solution. But I sure love playing Atari. That was my favorite job of all the jobs I had when I was doing that.
I bet.
It was new. I mean, we played Pong.
Yes.
And then we played a whole bunch of other stuff.
Oh, it's a game, and games are really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, super. Are we on time?
Yeah.
Steve? Apparently, yes, we're doing that. This is a very organized evening.
Well, I'm one of those 12-step people. I've been going to AA for almost 12
I was an alcoholic, but I thought I was functioning and living my life and happy and everything, but I drank every day. So I came to the 12 steps, and after a couple of years, someone suggested going to meditation practice, and they encourage everyone to have a spiritual program, and I didn't want to go to the spiritual programs that most people go to. And so they give everyone a choice to find your own path. So I was interested in Buddhism for the last 11 years, and as you know, I just joined this group. I read about it a lot, and attended different meetings and different groups in different places, but never became part of the group, because I have my other groups two, 3 times a week. So. But I'm still smoking, so anyone has tips for me on that?
Oh, that's great. That's great. Thank you. Yeah, that's how it works. It does work. You come home. Home to yourself. Ying?
I'm not really an addictive personality. I do definitely notice that people tend to have a big spectrum in how likely they tend to be addicted to things. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing I have learned from people in my life who tend to be addicted is that how important it is to realize that whether we're addicted to something or not, we need help. We need help that's sort of beyond the power of the individual.
Yeah.
So things like AA, or I know many people who come to Native American spirituality because they need something bigger than just the power in themselves to combat something. And it's actually really, really beautiful when they make that step.
Yes.
And you know, I've just by being around people like that and being around Buddhism and Native American spirituality, I feel the same way about my life in that I need help.
Yes.
And you know, always to sort of give up some of my own wish to change my life into sort of surrendering or taking refuge really into something a little bit bigger, and then trusting that power to sort of take its own shape in my life, you know, so not just correcting a certain behavior or addiction, so to speak, because I could find so-called addictions in my own life as well, but to almost just constantly taking refuge and to sort of relax in the bigger things that, you know, like let that take form in my life. Does that make sense?
And certainly community would have something to do with that.
Yeah.
It's about community, really.
Yeah.
And that's what the 12 step is about also,
yes,
and creating a community around it.
Yeah.
And leaving it open so that, as Steve said, you can choose.
Yeah. Another thing that I want to share is that you mentioned how much money and so on is used for anesthesia.
Yes.
And sometimes I question if that there's actually more of that now than in any other time. You know, in a way we could say religion is drugs for the masses as well. However, I read something really beautiful recently where in the New York Times, it was talking about how basically to be a creative person, to be a writer, specifically in these numbing times, right? Speaking about the sort of political climate, or just, you know, we all have a little bit of sense that this world is crazy, which I think is actually in a way a good sign, because if we realize that the world is crazy, we can, you know, I think it's quite possible the world has always been crazy, but people didn't feel that way about it. But anyway, like the beautiful thing where this writer talked about is that the word anesthesia, the opposite of it is, well, anesthetic, the opposite of it is aesthetic or beauty. So, yeah, which I was like, oh, why didn't I realize that?
Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah, right? And so if we can find that beauty, and obviously it's a bigger sense of beauty.
Yes.
Which is community, is power, is residing in something larger.
Yes.
Then that unnumbs us. And I have a deep sense of recognition with that particular sentiment,
mm-hmm.
especially since I do identify as a creative person. You know, what moves me is a deep sense of beauty,
yes.
and that is everywhere around us. So, so then how do I recognize when I am numb or stuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I am not, and what's the distinction?
Yes. What is clarity?
What is clarity?
How do I come to clarity?
Right.
And it's, remember the session when we were passing the food around and one of the baskets had strawberries in it, and it was the end of session, and somebody received the basket of strawberries and burst into tears because it was so beautiful. It's like that.
I remember in one of the, I think it was last year's February session at Jikoji, when you talked about, at the end of your talk, you know, what is it that makes a tree bloom like that?
Yes.
Like the whole tree going to bloom, you know? And that's what I want to sort of feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to, there is a winter of nothing happening, right? And a season in a way, and then spring comes, and then there's so much energy that bursts forth.
Yes. So the dark time is real also. You have to recognize it. Oh, and then do something. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you. You just made it much bigger.
Okay.
Yeah. Beautiful.
That we should let the flower of our life force bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across that recently, and it really moved me a lot, because I do a lot of gardening, and I try to coax things into blooming. I mean, it's also very easy to get attached to the blooming stage and not look at the other,
yes.
you know, all the rest of the time that you need to take care of a plant or take care of yourself. So, but I cherish that, his thought about that
oh.
cultivation of our life force.
And that's beautiful also. It's very beautiful. Yeah.
And I know we have to close, but I did bring, the wrong night to bring chocolates, but I did bring a box of chocolates. So I hope there are no chocoholics.
Oh no, we're all chocoholics.
Well, okay.
We'll just notice how addicted we are to chocolate as we eat them.
Okay, one announcement that you'd like a double dose of Angie this week. She's going to be here tomorrow night at 7:30.
Yes.
With the insight meditation group. And any other announcements?
Well, consider the next precept, I guess, which is about speaking of errors and faults. So it's about our talking. That's a very good subject, too. So keep this in mind, and we'll talk about it next week.
1 minute sit.